Good afternoon. Welcome to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. You know the old saying about what goes down has got to come back up, and that's exactly what we saw in this market trade today. There were a few lingering negativities in a few complexes, like the lean hogs for the month of April, and then you look at the wheat numbers, and really the numbers out of Kansas City ended up finishing all the way to the negative, but everybody else saw some decent numbers where a lot of influence markets, including macro fundamentals. What happened this week with this crazy wheat dump that continue to trade? And we've got a WASDE coming out tomorrow, and we'll look at the EU markets and more. As Mike Zuzulo joins us, Mike is with Global Commodity Analytics. So let's kind of start out talking about these macro fundamentals. You and I kind of on the midday were talking a little bit about, you know, kind of a nice to see a surprise turnaround within these grain trades. What's been your takeaway?
Well, my takeaway first, I think, kind of is with what you were kind of talking about just now, Susan, is it really does need to be more than one day long. And in one way, it's nerve-wracking to know that the USDA WASDE report is tomorrow and it could upset the apple cart. But as hard as we've fallen here, led by the European wheat and the French futures, I'm actually kind of glad that we're going to have a USDA update tomorrow to really test the resolve of whether this market can put together a rally for more than just 24 hours, because that's been the Humpty Dumpty scenario, as I would call it, that we face really ever since the Thanksgiving to Christmas holiday. We've had these very short rallies, but they've been sold aggressively and new lows have ensued. And the thing that I've always worked from since the harvest in the United States has been the idea that the investors have not really wanted to come in and buy the commodities because of the Federal Reserve and because of China. This week, in the last 2 days, in fact, we've seen the Federal Reserve say twice that they're nearing a point of wanting to cut interest rates, once to the House, once to the Senate today. And then China came out with their big National Party Congress, National People's Congress, and commented on a 5% growth this coming year, this 2024 year. They were light on details, but then they released their January and February export-import data, and those numbers were truly astounding. I mean, and most traders at this point are believing them, that exports, for instance, for those 2 months, up over 7%. And that gave us a five-week high today in the copper, and we call that, you know, Dr. Copper, because it really is kind of the PhD level of what's going on in China typically when it comes to the market. So I'm wondering if we're not finally putting to bed once and for all the Federal Reserve negativity, the Chinese negativity that has blossomed and bloomed into this negative demand and negative mindset that China is going to deflate the world economy and commodities are going to be hit the hardest.
So this wheat dump, and I know that there's a bigger picture too than the fact that Russia has been selling wheat very cheap. Kind of, first of all, what has been your takeaway as we saw those offerings come to the marketplace way below what the United States was offering for the same quality wheat?
Yeah, and this is a point that I'm glad you made, because Russia really has been an issue, and it continues to be an issue. And I thought 3 months ago that Russia would start to be kind of tapering off on their available supplies or exportable supplies of wheat, and they have not. And so there's no way of getting around that in the analysis. In fact, just this past week or so, they went from essentially a floor price that the market had assumed was going to be about $220 a ton. Now they're selling below $200 a ton, and Romania is running in there trying to sell just as cheap. And that's the problem that we can't get around, but that's also why I think the Baltic prices need to bottom, and then the European prices, and then the U.S. prices. And so to answer your question directly, what I think is really going on here, other than Putin and Russia flooding the market to generate income because of these increased sanctions we saw 2 weeks ago in energy and other materials, but not food and not fertilizer so far from what it looks like, they've flooded the market with more wheat, and the Russian ruble has continued to weaken against the dollar. Now, that to me is kind of where all roads come to an end and to a point. We had a stronger Brazilian currency, a stronger Russian currency, and a stronger Chinese currency after today and after all this news came out. And I think that's really, at the end of the day, where the funds and the fundamentals meet.
So not meaning to be the conspiracy theorist, or maybe so, depending on how you look at this, we were having some discussions yesterday evening with a couple commodity folks, and it was like, okay, they're selling wheat very inexpensively to some of these other countries, and it's almost the feel of, okay, we gave you wheat, you needed food, we gave it to you cheap, now help us out.
And I think there's a degree of long-term issues that we're going to have to face as American farmers. And I think the American farmer's getting it. And I think the funds and the investors are getting it, that these BRICS countries are trying to wall themselves off from the U.S. dollar and from the United States and Europe and Japan being the major players in the world economy and the world banking system. That's going to continue. There's no way around that. But Susan, this past weekend, when I looked at the USDA's agricultural update for trade, they actually increased the U.S. export volume of corn, wheat, rice, sorghum to the point of about 1.6 million metric tons. And so this, what I would call an illusion that our demand is bad in world commodities and that it's awful in U.S. commodities, I just don't see it when the USDA themselves are increasing demand. So that's a big element to tomorrow's report and why I think between South American supplies and what USDA says on the WASDE demand side of the equation, I'm hoping that we can really put some blocks together and put some dominoes together, and we don't just kick Humpty Dumpty off the wall again and pound him with a hammer.
That's a good analogy of that. Well, stick around, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this WASDE report that's due out tomorrow. There seems to be a lot of discussion, shall we say, as to what these numbers could have and how much of an influence it'll have on the markets after those numbers are released. We'll also take a look a little bit more at this European market and then on the livestock side to see the numbers, except for the lean hogs in April, all turn green on the day and see some last-minute cash push. Interesting things to take a look at. More is coming up. It's a Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.
When you're a farmer, tomorrow always brings a new challenge. Unexpected weather, invasive pests, volatile markets, the list goes on. But with the enhanced Channel Seed Brand's top-performing products, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can rise to meet them all. Channel Seed, let's rise to the challenge. And catch our new Channel Nebraska podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back to the Channel Final Bell here on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. As Mike Zuzulo continues to join us, Mike, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics. And, you know, you made reference to it a few times in the front half, and that's this WASDE report of tomorrow. And I don't know, maybe it's just my perception, but it seems like there's a lot of weight that's being put on this report and those numbers of what they could say come tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think that goes back in part, Susan, to the narrative that we laid out about the negative demand mindset, and also goes back in part to the fact that USDA hasn't kept up with Brazil's official agency for estimates, CONAB. And if my recollection is correct, I think USDA actually trained the Brazilians when they set up CONAB. So it's a bit of a surprise they haven't continued to follow them more closely like they typically do or can do. And as we know, we get into the February, March, and April reports. They become extremely important from a standpoint of big crops getting bigger or small crops getting smaller. And I think that's especially noteworthy this year again, given the fact that one of the pieces of bad news that the trade completely ignored today in the soybean complex was the fact that China's soybean imports for January and February were 13 million metric tons, and that was a five-year low equivalent as far as what they brought in those 2 months. But this goes back to the ideas, well, is there still too much weather that has not been priced into the South American crop? Because as I've told my clients a lot lately, it's really important at this stage of the game, with over half now harvested of Brazil's soybean crop and the high likelihood that we're going to at least have an above-average crop in Argentina, let's watch that Brazilian Paranagua soybean price, because at the end of the day, that's what really matters in terms of, is the crop low enough in terms of yield? The price is certainly low enough that farmers just say, I'm not selling anymore. I'm going to start putting some away in whatever variety I can, whether it's bags or whatever. And indeed, we have started to see that Paranagua market come up about $400 a ton back in the beginning, middle part of February. Now it's getting back towards a 415, 420 a ton. That compares to us at about 445, 450. And I think that's really a valuable tool to use as we see USDA's numbers, because you can argue what the Brazilian crop is, but I think the price is going to tell us really what the price is. And this goes right back to that demand mindset and that Brazilian currency. That to me is going to be the number one factor as far as how much more market share we lose to Brazil in the next 6 months when it comes to China.
So could we possibly see a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction, per se, when those numbers get released tomorrow?
It's going to be more difficult to get a knee-jerk bullish reaction unless we come in underneath the lowest trade guess on world-ending stocks. And the range that I'm looking at from Reuters Refinitiv is about 111 million metric tons. That compares to a 116 number USDA gave us in February. And I say it's going to be harder because we're back to that 1150, 1160 plus area in March and May bean futures, Susan. And I think those are getting pretty lofty again. I mean, can we really justify a $12 soybean futures price given the stocks levels that we're going into this report having in terms of an oversupply? And China, again, reiterated in their update from their Congress this week, we're going to go hard on genetically modified beans in our domestic acreage base, and we're going to cull more of our sow breeding herd because we are oversupplied. And so they're about 41 million head right now, it sounds like, in terms of sows. They want to go down to a top-end number of 39 million. So liquidation pressure is still out there, and that means less meal consumption.
All right, what about this cattle market? I mean, 1240 hit, and things kind of got a little crazy in a good way.
Yeah, I'm guessing we have had some cash trade, and you had told me before we came on air that we maybe did in the north. I think the cattle, as we talked about midday, maybe range-bound. They went up to the top of their range, a 189 area to 182, 183 area seems to be where we've settled in to kind of a sideways trading range for the last 3 weeks. And I think the fat cattle are waiting on the feeder cattle, and they're waiting on the hogs. I would note that April fat cattle still have a gap from late October of last year up above the 190 level. So that's a really crucial area for me, that if we could get April up that high, I'd jump on the hedging train pretty hard again.
What about for these hogs? I mean, they too, except for the April contract, got to see some good positive action.
Yes, and I think that goes back to the overall narrative that China is coming out of the hole, and that's something that we're going to really have to watch. I talked to a hog client today, and he said, when would you probably start to look at hedging June hogs now that we're back above 100? And you know, I said, you know, the last time we got to this point, we really kind of petered out pretty dramatically as we got closer to 101.50, 102 area. And I think that's probably the area that I would call overvalue or being oversupplied and probably hurt our demand base. Now, having said that, I clearly between the Chinese data and the export sales being over 36,000 metric tons, China, our number one buyer, as long as we keep seeing that, that kind of opens the lid up a little bit more.
What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
GlobalComResearch.com, GlobalCom with two M's, research.com.
And that's today's Channel Final Bell on the World Radio Network.